So now we'll go to text 40. Pati chutam tisthati distraksitam grihastitam tadhitam manasyati vivatyanato apitadiksito vane grihe avigupto asyato najivati. So here, Yamaraj, as a little boy, addressing those wives of Suyagya who were lamenting that they would have no protection. That was their basic lamentation. So he's giving another example. First he had said that I saw for myself that I was a young boy and yet I was protected by the Supreme Lord. So I was protected by Him then. I was protected by Him before, while I was still in the womb. I'm being protected by Him now. And I assume, therefore, that I'll be protected by Him in the future. And nothing is going to happen outside of His will. So now an example. Sometimes one loses his money on a public street where everyone can see it. And yet his money is protected by destiny and not seen by others. Has anyone had this example themselves? Yes? Then the man who lost it gets it back. On the other hand, if the Lord does not give protection, even money maintained very securely at home is lost. If the Supreme Lord gives one protection, even though one has no protector and is in the jungle, one remains alive. Whereas a person well protected at home by relatives and others sometimes dies. No one is able to protect him. Prabhupada's purport. These are examples of the supremacy of the Lord, specifically in the realm of protection. Our plan to protect or annihilate do not act. But whatever he thinks of doing, our plans to protect or annihilate do not act, ours. But whatever he thinks of doing actually happens. This is why he is the Supreme Lord. The examples given in this regard are practical. Everyone has such practical experiences. And there are also many other clear examples. For instance, Prahlad Maharaj said that a child is certainly dependent on his father and mother. But in spite of their presence, the child is harassed in many ways. Sometimes, in spite of a supply of good medicine and an experienced physician, a patient does not survive. Therefore, since everything is dependent on the free will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, our only duty is to surrender unto Him and seek His protection. So the old Western theological problem of how can God and evil exist simultaneously in this world turns into no problem at all. Because if you say that He's all good, then you assume that although you may not see it with your little tiny, tiny intelligence, ultimately everything is good. So that takes great faith and a deep surrender. And that is what we are meant to develop. Next verse. This is again Yamaraj speaking in the story told by Hiranyakashipu. Every conditioned soul receives a different type of body according to his work. And when the engagement is finished, the body is finished. Regardless of the age, when it's over, it's over. Although the spirit soul is situated in subtle and gross material bodies in different forms of life, he is not bound by them, for he is always understood to be completely different from the manifest body. Purport, Prabhupada's purport. Here it is very plainly explained that God is not responsible for the living entities accepting different types of bodies, nor is He responsible for our individual fate or karma or what we experience in this world, or what the world experiences. One has to accept the body according to the laws of nature and one's own karma. Therefore, the Vedic injunction is that a person engaged in material activities should be given directions by which he can intelligently apply his activities to the service of the Lord to become free from the material bondage of repeated birth and death. So, kamana tab abhyarcha siddham vindati manava. From what chapter? Huh?
1846.
And third also. The Lord is always ready to give directions. Notice the word always. That means right at this moment even, He is ready to give us directions to come to Him. Always means continuously, always. Indeed, His directions are elaborately given in Bhagavad Gita. If we take advantage of these directions, then, in spite of our being conditioned by the laws of material nature, we shall become free to attain our original constitution. Mameva ye prapadyante mayame tantarantite. We should have firm faith that the Lord is supreme, and that if we surrender to Him, He will take charge of us and indicate how we can get out of material life and return home back to Godhead. Without such surrender, one is obliged to accept a certain type of body according to his karma, sometimes as an animal, sometimes a demigod, and so on. What's so on? What's an example of so on there? An animal, a demigod, and so on. A human, a bird, plant. What kind of a plant? Yes, what kind of a plant? Well, what kind of a plant? Any kind of a plant. Yeah, okay. Now, what else? A spinach plant. Or a carnivorous plant. Yeah, that eats flies. There's one type of a plant that I saw in Udupi that's not here. We used to call it the shy plant. It has leaves like this, and if you touch it, it goes shh. You ever seen one of those? They don't have them in Vrindavan. Did you see them in Udupi?
Oh, I have.
Yes, they're everywhere there, on the side of every road. You just touch it, the leaves go whoosh. And then after some time, it opens up again. So you'd like to be that kind of a plant? Or would you rather be a cactus? And anyone who comes near you, instead of defending by going like this, you stick them? Or the Venus flytrap, the carnivorous plant that a fly comes in and goes, ah! Or an insect, a mosquito, a fly, so on. There's so many hundreds of different manifestations of our karma and all the activities we've done. So clearly we don't want that. We don't want that. He will take charge of us if we surrender to Him and indicate how we can get out of material life and return back to home, back to Godhead. Without such surrender, one is obliged to accept a certain type of body according to his karma, sometimes as an animal, sometimes a demigod, and so on. So we want to get out. This is the basic teaching of the Krishna consciousness movement, that we should use our life responsibly and not try to enjoy within this realm, but rather to get out, because our attempts at enjoyment will entangle us further. Attempts at trying to manipulate the material energy will entangle us further and cause repeated births and deaths and so on into different species. So better to surrender to Krishna and have firm faith that the Lord is supreme. And if we surrender to Him, He will take charge of us and indicate how we can get out of material life and return home back to Godhead. Very reassuring. He will indicate. But of course, that's if we want to get out. And we sort of tend to be a little bit in the middle. We'd like to get out, but we'd like to stay because we have certain things we'd like to do. But he will indicate to us how, always. Another example. Just as a householder, this is text 42, although different from the identity of his house, thinks his house to be identical with him, because this is, we invest the sense of I am, which is called ahankar, and we invest that into what is mine. I have a house, and the house is mine. And as soon as we invest the sense of self into an object, it becomes mine. And then it is as if it is us, and we experience the happiness and miseries of it being us. So when the house is burned by fire, we experience as if we are burned by fire, even though the house has nothing to do with us. When it wins an award for the best house and the best garden, we feel I have won the award. So the conditioned soul, due to ignorance, accepts the body to be himself, although the body is actually different from the soul. Just as the house is different from the person who lives within the house, the body is different from the soul who lives within the body. The body is obtained. So how does one get the house? How does one get the body? Obtained through a combination of portions of earth, water, and fire. And when the earth, water, and fire are transformed in the course of time, the body is vanquished. They are dissipated. The ingredients go in their own directions. The soul has nothing to do with this creation and dissolution of the body. It's due to an investing of the sense of self, because that is the nature of the ego. It has a sense of existence. This is me, a sense of I-ness. Everyone understands what I mean by I-ness? A sense of this is me. So when we take that sense of, that's part of the soul, his identity, who we actually are, but when it's falsely placed in the body or the possessions of the body, then that is illusion. That is called mine. But it's obviously, the things of this world are obviously not mine, because when I die, I cannot take them with me. I can take with me what is mine. So the body is not me, nor is it mine, because I leave and it stays and disassembles, very heavy. Even though we read it in its philosophy, but it's actually extremely heavy, and it cuts to the heart of illusion, of our illusion being in the material world. So therefore Krishna presents this first in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita before presenting anything else. Another example. As fire, although situated in wood, is perceived to be different from the wood, as air, although situated within the mouth and nostrils, is perceived to be separate from the mouth and nostrils, and the sky, although all-pervading, it's everywhere, air or ether is everywhere, and never mixes with anything. So in the same way, the living entity, although now encaged within the material body, of which it is the source, the living entity. Matter comes from life. Encaged within the material body, of which it is the source, the soul, the living entity, is separate from the body. We'll read from, not the whole purport, but about halfway down the first page, or just a few sentences down. As fire appears separate from wood, that's simple. The fire is within the wood, otherwise by the process of adding more flame, it couldn't come out. And as the air flowing through the nostrils and mouth of the body appears separate from the body, so the Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears separate from the living being, but is actually separate and not separate simultaneously. This is the philosophy of Acintya-Bheda-Bheda, Tattva, propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. According to the reactions of karma, the living being appears separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We feel that sense of I-ness, and that's the difference between the preaching of Hiranyakashipu and the preaching that Prahlad is going to give. He's talking about the soul, but the complete understanding of the soul is, the complete understanding of the soul is in relationship to Krishna, and to define the soul even as spiritual, but neglecting to speak about his relationship with Krishna, is incomplete understanding of the soul. So we appear separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So to even to think of ourselves as tattvamasi, you are that, aham brahmasmi, I am, which is the response of the student when the teacher says tattvamasi, you are that substance that is all-pervading. And then the student replies, aham brahmasmi, I am a soul, I'm spirit. That still is incomplete. Until we understand that we are Krishna's, Krishna's servant, that is an incomplete understanding of who we are. So now, we appear or feel separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is Maya's trick. Maya Javani Katsanam, the curtain of Maya makes us feel in that way. Actually experience ourselves as separate from Krishna. But actually, he is very intimately related, the soul, is intimately related with the Lord. Actually, we have an intimate relationship with Krishna. Consequently, even though we now seem neglected by the Lord, but he is actually always alert, awake, aware of our activities. Under all circumstances, therefore, we should simply depend on the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus revive, awaken our intimate relationship with him. We must depend on the authority and control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That again is surrender. Yamaraj continued, O lamenters, you are all fools. Mudha, he actually calls him Mudha, Mudo Yam Anusochata. O you who are lamenting or crying for this Suyagya, who is no longer there, he's lying there. You are all fools. You are lamenting because he's not there. He's gone. He's gone. And you are lamenting. The person named Suyagya, for whom you lament, is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. If you think he's the body, same preaching as Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, then what is the cause of your lamentation? He's there. Previously he heard you and replied to you, but now, not finding him, you are lamenting. This is contradictory behavior. For you have never actually seen the person within the body who heard you and replied. There is no need for your lamentation, for the body you have always seen is lying here. Only a little boy who the queens don't know can get away with such heavy talk at this time. Only Yamaraj. Because even Krishna, after Bhishma Dev left this world, and the Pandavas, they performed the funeral ceremonies for those who had died in the battle of Kurukshetra. First, you speak to them, but first you have to say, okay, you know, he's gone now. He was such a great soul, and you loved him so much, and he loved you so much, and you really miss him. And then after a little bit of time, you can say, okay, but let's face it, he's eternal, and you're eternal. We'll read just from the end of this purport. After death, when the breath within the body, who is hearing and replying is gone. After death, when the breath within the nostrils has stopped, one can understand that the person within the body who is hearing and replying has now gone. Therefore, in effect, the common man concludes that actually the spirit soul was different from the body and has now gone away. Thus, even a common man, coming to his senses, can know that the real person who was within the body and was hearing and replying was never seen. For that which was never seen, what is the need of lamentation? This is on the very jnana type of level. Matra spasya stakyantaya. But I had a relationship with the body. And Krishna's reply is that you have to tolerate this, the happiness and distress of these things come and go like the summer and winter season. In the body, the most important substance is the life air. But that also is neither the listener nor the speaker. Beyond even the life air, the soul can do nothing. For the super soul is actually the director in cooperation with the individual soul. The super soul conducting the activities of the body is different from the body and living force. A little more than halfway through Prabhupada's purport. Who is acting, actually? Although the individual soul possesses the indriyas or senses, he is not actually the proprietor, even of his own body. The second canto of the Bhagavatam at the end describes this. There's three. There's the body, there's the demigods who are in control of the senses, and the soul. These are all participating in the activities. And ultimately the super soul, they're all participating in the activities that we take for granted, the moving of the hands, the doing this, the speaking. This is all dependent on the demigods. And if we think it is us doing it, we are an illusion, because as soon as we become paralyzed or become very weak, even if we get some fever, even chikungunya fever, we cannot do all the things that we take for granted. And it's so disturbing. Why? Because we think in illusion that I'm the one doing it. And it is based on my wanting to do it, and I do what I want, and some little fever comes along, some little bugs, microbes enter the system, and then all our feeling that I'm the one doing it, is finished. And it's frustrating. We don't like it. Our illusion is cracked. We are dependent at every moment on the super soul, who is actually, by his permitting us, he's allowing, as the Upadrashtana and Anumanta, he is allowing everything to go on. He is not actually the proprietor, for the proprietor is the super soul. What does proprietor mean? The owner. Consequently, the super soul is called Rishikesh. And the individual soul is advised by the direction of the super soul to surrender to him and thus be happy. Thus he can become immortal and be transferred to the spiritual kingdom, where he will achieve the highest success of an eternal blissful life of knowledge. In conclusion, the individual soul is different from the body, senses, living force, and the airs within the body. And above him is the super soul, who gives the individual soul all facilities. The individual soul who renders everything to the super soul lives happily within the body. But when we turn our back on the super soul, we cannot be happy. When we make friendship with the super soul, we can be peaceful and happy living under his protection. And when we love one Krishna, we see the super soul as Krishna, then we can be with Krishna continuously. The five material elements, the 10 senses and the mind, all combine to form the various parts of the gross and subtle bodies. The living entity comes in contact. This is heavy preaching. Aranyakashipu, that great stalwart preacher, but there's no intention on his part to follow anything like this. especially with the super soul. Rather, he wants to kill the super soul. Just ignoring the super soul is insufficient for Hiranyakashipu. Therefore, he's a real demon. The living entity comes in contact with his material bodies, whether high or low, and later gives them up by his personal prowess, by his personal desire, by what he wants. He's getting one body after the next. I want this. What do you feel that you've missed out on in this life? Okay, you can have that in your next life by your prowess of desires. What did you have too much of that you don't want to ever see again? Next life. And in this way, we can migrate and transfer ourselves from one body to the next, trying to get the things what we lack, and pushing away the things that we no longer want, again and again and again by our power. This strength can be perceived in a living entity's personal power to possess different kinds of bodies. My Prabhupada's purport explains, human life is not meant for this type of icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena varada. I don't want this, and this I really want. My only problem is I didn't have this. Human life is not meant for that, unless the only thing we want is love for Krishna. That is the purpose of human life. And if we have that desire, Krishna will help us. Tadami buddhiyogam tam yena mamupyanti te. But we have to bhajate pritipurvakam. We have to have some intensity of desire and love for Krishna to step in. But he'll give us instructions. He'll give us instructions. But we have to do our part. As long as the spirit soul is covered by the subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego, he is bound to the results of his fruitive activities. Because of this covering, the spirit soul is connected with the material energy and must accordingly suffer material conditions and reversals continually, life after life. It's not very hopeful for our plans in material existence, is it? And Prabhupada explains in the purport to 47, when the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna, the intelligence is purified. So what is that called when the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna?
Devotional service.
Yes, Savai, Mana Krishna. Yeah, you can say that. Yes, but that's what I was thinking of. What were you?
Samadhi.
Oops, that wasn't exactly what I was thinking of, but closer to what I was thinking. I was thinking of
Smaranam.
Yes, Smaranam. And what is the recommended method of getting the mind engaged in the lotus feet of Krishna? You're chanting Hare Krishna. But how often? Kirtaniya Sadahari. This is the conclusion. But Smaranam naturally follows Kirtanam. Therefore, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vishnu Smaranam. So we should chant Hare Krishna, and then when we're finished chanting Hare Krishna, we should chant Hare Krishna. The duty of human beings, therefore, is to keep the mind always engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord. Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayor. When the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna, the intelligence is purified, and then the intelligence gets inspiration from the Supersoul, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam. Thus, the living entity makes progress towards liberation from material bondage. It is fruitless. Who is speaking?
Yamaraj.
It is fruitless to see and talk of the material modes of nature and their resultant so-called happiness and distress as if they were factual. Such heavy preaching. When the mind wanders during the day and a man begins to think himself extremely important, or when he dreams at night and sees a beautiful woman enjoying with him, these are merely false dreams. Similarly, the happiness and distress caused by the material senses should be understood to be meaningless. They are sitting on the mind and the subtle body only. They are meaningless. Oh, today this wonderful thing happened. Oh, today this terrible thing happened. On the material level, this sankalpa, vikalpa, accepting, rejecting, this is good, this is bad, it is all meaningless. This is what he's saying. This is the jnana level. All useless. It's all manodharma. Imagination. There's no reality to it. And this is what contemporary civilization is based on, this type of thinking. We'll read from the, let's see how much of Prabhupada's purport. This, the last quarter. Even if by fruit of activity, you see where that is? Even if by fruit of activity or worship of the demigods, one is elevated, that's a new word, isn't it? Elevated. It's a good one, actually. To the higher planetary systems, because the devotee sees even the higher planetary systems as phantasmagoria, non-existent. For sense enjoyment, his situation is condemned in Bhagavad Gita as antavat, perishable. The happiness one enjoys in this way is like the pleasure of embracing a young woman in a dream. For some time it may be pleasing, but actually the basic principle is false. It's resting on the mental platform alone. The mental concoction of happiness and distress in this material world are compared to dreams because of their falseness, their temporality, their temporariness. All thoughts of obtaining happiness by using material senses have a false background and they rest on the mind, and they are temporary and they have no meaning. Those who have full knowledge of self-realization, who know very well that the spirit soul is eternal where the body is perishable, are not overwhelmed by lamentation. But persons who lack knowledge of self-realization certainly lament. Therefore, it is difficult to educate a person in illusion. When one's mind is attached to something and filled with lamentation, he can hear nothing. Nothing. Because the mind is just, it's holding on tightly to something. When you're angry at someone or lamenting about something, the mind cannot hear anything. Very difficult to educate a person in illusion. Purport. According to the Mamamsa philosophy, everything is eternal, nitya. And according to the Sankhya philosophers, everything is mitya, or anitya, impermanent. Nonetheless, without real knowledge of Atma, the soul, such philosophers must be bewildered and must continue to lament as sudras. Srila Sukadeva Goswami therefore said to Maharaj Prakrit, Shotavyadini Rajendra Nrinam Shanti Sahasrasa Apashyatam Atma Tattvam Griheshu Grihamedinam. Those who are materially engrossed, being blind to knowledge of the ultimate truth, have many subjects for hearing in human society, O Emperor. For ordinary persons engaged in material activities, there are many, many subjects to understand because such persons do not understand self-realization. One must therefore be educated in self-realization so that under any circumstances in life, he will remain steady in his vows. Not just theoretically, but deeply educated and experienced in self-realization. So one can see reality as different from illusion, to actually discriminate between what is real and what is not real. And to do this, one needs to control one's
senses.
And with out of the two, senses and mind, which one am I referring to? Because that's what this is. Yes, the mind. We can't believe our mind and what it's holding on to, and cannot accept that as reality if we want to become steady. Unless, of course, our mind becomes our friend, bandhuratmat manastasyat. Unless it is fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna and is attached to Krishna, we cannot accept what it says, just simply because it's attached to it. Because it will be attached to one thing, and the next moment it will reject that same thing. That is the nature of the mind. Chanchalam hi mana krishna. And now he's going to tell another story. Yamaraj is telling a story. Hiranyakashipu is telling the story of Yamaraj. And because people are difficult in illusion, like the crying queens, to educate, they're going to hear a story, but the story is not really meant for the crying queens, but it's really meant for... Okay, that's one level in between. As Hiranyakashipu is preaching to his relatives, there was once a hunter who lured birds with food and captured them after spreading a net. He lived as if appointed by death personified as the killer of the birds. While wandering in the forest, the hunter saw a pair of Kalinga birds. Of the two, the female was captivated by the hunter's lure. O queen of Suyagya, this is Hiranyakashipu speaking to the queens as opposed to Yamaraj. O queens of Suyagya, the male Kalinga bird, seeing his wife put into the greatest danger in the grip of providence, became very unhappy. How could he tolerate her suffering? Because of affection, the poor bird, being unable to release her, began to lament for his wife. Alas, how merciless is providence. My wife, unable to be helped by anyone, is in such an awkward position and lamenting for me. What will providence gain by taking away this poor bird? What will be the profit? If unkind providence takes away my wife, who is half my body, why should he not take me also? What is the use of my living without half my body, bereaved by loss of my wife? What shall I gain in this way? The unfortunate baby birds, bereft of their mother, are waiting in the nest for her to feed them. They are still very small and have not yet grown their wings. How shall I be able to maintain them? Purport. The bird is lamenting for the mother of his children because the mother naturally maintains and cares for the children. Yamaraj, however, in the guise of a small boy, has already explained that although his mother left him uncared for and wandering in the forest, the tigers and other ferocious animals had not eaten him. The real fact is that if the Supreme Personality of Godhead protects one, even though one be motherless and fatherless, one can be maintained by the goodwill of the Lord. Otherwise, if the Supreme Lord does not give one protection, one must suffer in spite of the presence of his father and mother. Another example is sometimes a patient dies in spite of a good physician and good medicine. Same examples given before. Thus, without the protection of the Lord, one cannot live with or without parents. So the bird is an illusion. Because of the loss of his wife, the Kalinga bird lamented with tears in his eyes. Meanwhile, following the dictations of mature time, the hunter, who was very carefully hidden in the distance, released his arrow, which pierced the body of the Kalinga bird and killed him. Thus Yamaraj, in the guise of a small boy, told all the queens, "You are all so foolish that you lament, but do not see your own death." Lamenting for others and not seeing our own death coming. Afflicted by a poor fund of knowledge, you do not know that even if you lament for your dead husband for hundreds of years, you will never get him back alive. And in the meantime, your lives will be finished. Yamaraj once asked Maharaj Yudhisthira, "What is the most wonderful thing within this world?" Maharaj Yudhisthira replied, "Ahanyahani bhutani gachantihayamalayam seshastavaram Chanti Kimmas Charam Ataparam. This is the most wonderful thing. Hundreds and thousands of living entities meet death at every moment, but a foolish living being nonetheless thinks himself deathless and does not prepare for death. This is the most wonderful thing in this world. Everyone has to die because everyone is fully under the control of material nature, yet everyone thinks that he is independent, that whatever he likes he can do, that he will never meet death but will live forever, and so on. So-called scientists are making various plans by which living entities in the future can live forever. But while they are thus pursuing such scientific knowledge, Yamaraj, in due course of time, will take them away from their business of so-called research. So Sri Hiranyakasipu will now speak again of the text 61. He said, while Yamaraj, in the form of a small boy, was instructing all the relatives surrounding the dead body of Suyagya, in other words, that they, you're lamenting him, but you're going to die. Stop worrying about your own protection. You're going to be protected. He was just the instrument through which Krishna protected you. Stop thinking of him in that way and take shelter of the Lord for your protection. So that's the message of Yamaraj and of the birds. And that is the message that Hiranyakashipu is giving, ironically, to the queens and to the relatives. Everyone was struck with wonder by his philosophical words. They could understand that everything material is temporary, not continuing to exist. After instructing all the foolish relatives of Suyagya, Yamaraj, in the form of a boy, disappeared from their vision. Then the relatives of King Suyagya performed the ritualistic funeral ceremonies. Therefore, none of you should be aggrieved for the loss of the body, whether your own or those of others. Only in ignorance does one make bodily distinctions, thinking, who am I, who are the others, what is mine, what is for others. So we'll read some sections of Prabhupada's purport here. As long as human society, do you see what we're reading from? As long as human society is in darkness, it's a few sentences down, and ignorance, men will continue to make huge arrangements in the bodily conception of life. This is described by Prahlad Maharaj as Bharam. In the materialistic conception, modern civilization makes enormous arrangements for huge roads, houses, mills, and factories. And this is man's conception of the advancement of civilization. People do not know, however, that at any time they themselves may be kicked out of the scene and forced to accept bodies that have nothing to do with these enormous houses, palaces, roads, and automobiles. Therefore, when Arjuna was thinking in terms of his bodily relationship with his kinsmen, Krishna immediately chastised him, saying, Kutastva kajmalamidam vishamei samupastitam anaryajushtam. The bodily conception of life is befitting the anaryas, the non-Aryans who are not advanced in knowledge. So everything in material, contemporary materialistic civilization makes sense if the purpose of life is economic development, and if the purpose of life is that no one will die. But as soon as one accepts that one's a spirit soul, and the purpose of life is to make advancement towards love for Krishna, then that frame of reference changes what is good and what is bad, what is important, what is not important. If I want to go from here to, from Delhi to Calcutta, first I have to assign that as my goal, my destination. And then I can talk about turning left, turning right, going by plane, going by train, going this class, that class, by bus. Or on the other hand, if I decide I want to go to Bombay, I will have to make opposite choices about what is good and what's bad. The whole definition of what is good and bad, what is to be done and what is not to be done, changes if the destination changes. So therefore, what makes sense spiritually, what is day for the self-realized soul is night for the materialist, because their destination is different. And they think, the materialists think, the spiritualist is crazy, and similarly the spiritualist thinks the materialist is crazy. Foolish, because both of them the others, seeing that the others are rejecting the primary principles of that they're basing their life upon, their destinations. So then the question is, of course, what is the proper destination? What are we seeing that others aren't seeing? So this question, what is the purpose of life? What is the destination of my life? Actually begins human life. And until we ask that question, if we just blindly follow what others are doing, we are considered non-humans, practically speaking. We have to ask that question, what is the purpose of my life? And then we should proceed with integrity towards fulfilling that purpose. Strength and integrity to do that to the best of our ability and depend on Krishna. We'll move a little further down in the purport. There's a song from the Brahma Vivarta Purana. Madhvacharya quotes from there's a long quotation from the Brahma Vivarta Purana. The purport, says Prabhupada, is that as long as we're in this human form of body, our duty is to understand the soul within the body. The body is not the self. We are different from the body. And therefore, there is no question of friends, enemies, or responsibilities in terms of the bodily conception of life. One should not be very anxious about the body's changing from childhood to boyhood, from boyhood to old age, and then to apparent annihilation. Rather, one should be very seriously concerned about the soul within the body and how to release the soul from the material clutches. The living entity within the body is never annihilated. Therefore, one should surely know that whether one has many friends or many enemies, his friends cannot help him and his enemies cannot do him any harm. One should know that he's a spirit soul, aham brahmasmi, and that the constitutional position of the soul is unaffected by the changes of the body. In all circumstances, everyone as a spirit soul must be a devotee of Lord Vishnu and should not be concerned with bodily relationships, whether with friends or with enemies. One should know that neither we ourselves nor our enemies in the bodily conception of life are ever killed. Very strong. Very strong. This is the basic principle of jnana. We're not the body, detachment from the material world. Detachment, renunciation of everything material. In jnana is not so much become a devotee of Vishnu and be concerned about his pleasure. That's not there. But all the rest is basically the preaching of detachment. And then the final verse in this chapter. Sri Narada continued, Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, heard the instructions of Hiranyakashipu along with her daughter-in-law, Rishabhanu, Hiranyaksha's wife. She then forgot her grief over her son's death and thus engaged her mind and attention in understanding the real philosophy of life. So this is good for giving up attachment to matter. So who else got preached to in this way, using something quite miraculous? When did Maharaj Yudhisthira? Oh yes, not at this time, but a different part of the Bhagavatam. Prachini Barhisat, yes. Yes, very, very, very strongly. Rahugana Maharaj, who else?
Harshashoka preached to.
Yes, that's who I was thinking of. Dr. Ketu. Oh, Your own son telling you this. Who is my mother? Who is, you're sitting there crying? Oh, my son is dead. And then the son gets up and preaches to you. Which one? You can come back. Can't you see your mother and father are lamenting? Oh, which one am I, mother and father? I've had so many mothers and fathers. I've had dog mothers and fathers and bird mothers and fathers and on and on and on. This is to point us towards our actual duty, because throughout all the different bodies that we're souls, and our relationship with Krishna remains constant, eternal. That's what remains constant and eternal. So to give up the eternal for the temporary is foolish. So that's the message here. Don't give up that which is fleeting and flickering and changing for your real benefit, which is eternal, your relationship with Krishna. Here's Prabhupada's purport to this verse. When a relative dies, one certainly becomes very much interested in philosophy, not the inheritance. But when the funeral ceremony is over, one again becomes attentive to materialism. Even daityas, who are materialistic persons, sometimes think of philosophy when some relative meets death. The technical term for this attitude of the materialistic person is smashanobharagya, or detachment in a cemetery or place of cremation. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, four classes of men receive an understanding of spiritual life and God. Artha jigyasa artati jnani nigyani. Especially when one is very much distressed by material conditions, one becomes interested in God. That's if one is a Sukritina, pious person. Therefore, Kunti Devi said in her prayers to Krishna that she preferred distress to a happy mood of life. And most of us prefer a happy mood of life to distress. And within our desire to become devotees tends to be the desire for liberation or distress removal. But Kunti Devi is not like that. She prefers distress to... Prabhupada will explain the point clearly. It's not that the devotees like distress, but they like to be with Krishna. In the material world, one who is happy forgets Krishna or God. But sometimes, if one is actually pious but in distress, he remembers Krishna. Queen Kunti Devi therefore preferred distress because it is an opportunity for remembering Krishna. When Krishna was leaving Kunti Devi for his own country, what country was that? Dwarka. Kunti Devi regretfully said that she was better off in distress because Krishna was always present, whereas now that the Pandavas were situated in their kingdom, Krishna was going away. So she did not want to be separate from Krishna. She didn't care distress, she didn't care happiness. She only cared to be with Krishna. That is a devotee. That's all that was on her mind. Why? Because devotee means love for Krishna. And love for Krishna cannot tolerate, a lover of Krishna cannot tolerate being separate from Krishna. They will not exchange being with Krishna for the position of Lord Brahma in the material world, for liberation they see as narak, hell. They're so much in love with Krishna, awake in their relationship with Krishna, they will not exchange that for ruling the three worlds for anything, for any situation, happiness, distress. They only love Krishna. This is a devotee. For a devotee, distress is an opportunity to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. But the mind tends to want to run from Krishna in distress, as it tends to want to run from Krishna in material happiness. This is the nature of mind, the mind, aversion. This is due to impiety and lack of purity and lack of devotion. So the mind should be trained to take shelter always and only of Krishna. This is wonderful if we can do that. Then there's no question of happiness and distress for a person, a devotee who takes shelter of Krishna in all circumstances. There's no question of happiness and distress. There's only a question of being with Krishna, which brings the greatest happiness. So that's advanced. Thus then the Bhaktivedanta purports of the seventh chapter, seventh canto, second chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, Asura Varja, the best of the demons. So tomorrow he's going to get down from his Vyasasan. We shall hear how he gets into action, forgets the philosophy, begins his plans, continuing with his plans for revenge of killing Vishnu. Any questions, comments? Hari?
You mentioned that in all the processes of devotional service, our shelter is the holy name.
Our main has to be accompanied by the holy names.
So I was wondering,
should be accompanied.
We have one big shelter in the Bhagavatam.
But the Bhagavatam is going to tell you to chant the holy names. Nokia. Kill it. Yeah. This is the instruction in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the followers of Mahaprabhu. They accompany everything they do with the holy names. All the other processes. And it's been said, and that's the final words of Bhagavatam, Namasankirtanam.
Just to continue this, why couldn't one take shelter just in like hearing Srimad Bhagavatam without, say, regularly chanting
or worshipping the deity or
satsang?
Yeah, because what's going to happen in all those things? For the followers of Mahaprabhu, they're going to get the instruction of chanting Krishna's names. So we have to hear and follow the instructions. And this is the special gift, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. This is the gift of Mahaprabhu. If he's giving it to you, we should take it naturally. Just wait, I'm processing to see if I want to say anything else on this. And then Adi will finish with his question. So this is the answer that Maharaj Prickett gave to the question, what is the best thing to do? Get heard. 2.1.11. That's etam navidyamananam. Ittito akutabhayam yoginam ripa nirninam harinam anakirtanam. This is the answer, ultimately. So the Bhagavatam, it's not in opposition to this. The Bhagavatam or the holy names or the Bhagavatam, but the Bhagavatam is bringing us to the easy way of approaching Krishna in Kali Yuga. And it's for everyone, it's universal. But not that we shouldn't take to the Bhagavatam, but we also need the holy names of Krishna.
Isn't mentioned in that the shloka Parikshit, Shavanya Parikshit, Parikshit got perfection just by hearing, just by one of the nine processes, any one of the nine processes is possible. And Parikshit, we don't see that he was very much...
But he was Vishnu Arta also. He was personally protected by... He was such an exalted person. So... This is Mahaprabhu's mercy. It's a special benediction of Kali Yuga, and this is what causes demigods to want to take birth in Kali Yuga. It's because of the facility of dosha nidheira zanastieko mahadguna kirtana deva krishnasya muktasanga param vrajet. This is the facility that's given.
Sometimes people are easily inspired by lectures, but they fall asleep or chanting.
Well, sometimes people fall asleep during lectures and rousing, when japa, therefore arousing kirtan is very helpful for everyone. Yeah. You know, we're individuals, so it's not that you shouldn't live in Vrindavan, and you shouldn't teach, and you shouldn't study the Bhagavatam. Someone can just fully take shelter of the holy names if they have that ability, then let them do that. But one should accompany whatever one's path is with the holy names, with a taking shelter of the holy names. That's part of Mahaprabhu's message. You want to ask more? And even it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that if you can worship Radha and Krishna but not worship Mahaprabhu, and what does Kaviraj Goswami call you? Basically a demon. So that's heavy. Yeah. So we have to, and how to worship Mahaprabhu? Say Kirtanya, chanting Krishna's holy names. Kalo nasteva 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 ganiyata morka tumi nahika vedanta arikar Krishna mantra japasara mantra sara. But yet we have our natures, and we have our however we wish to proceed, we should also accompany it with the chanting of Krishna's holy
name. Kali Yuga, in this age,
nasteva nasteva nasteva, the special mercy. It's, therefore, it's the Yuga Dharma. And if I'm seeing this myself, because that unless one really knows that he has to take shelter of the holy names, then the tendency of the mind is to just wander and wander and wander and go running from here to there and not take shelter of the Bhagavatam and not take shelter of one's deities and not take shelter of the holy Dham, but just take shelter of the mind, the materialistic mind. That's the tendency. So therefore we have to grab the holy names. Grihe tako mani tako sadahari bolaneko. Yeah, that was not for everyone. In India. So Prabhupada said yes. So also in Chaitanya Charitamrita it's put it in the most important order of the spiritual master, just to chant 16 rounds a day. But minimum, 16 rounds minimum. He didn't say that there, but so many times Prabhupada said that. Minimum. And then he'd see devotees with their beat bags hanging on the door day after day, not moving. Very upset. And that chanting should be done properly, means avoiding the offenses. The 16, we should make that attempt to avoid the 10 offenses as we chant our 16 rounds. Because this was in India in the early days, the devotees were very sick, and very sick, had to rest a lot of the day. So I think, I can't remember who it was, but one devotee, all he could do practically was chant to 16 rounds, and then it took all his energy and he'd rest. So maybe there was some criticism or something, not doing any service. Yeah.
There's no real suffering.
There's no suffering. There's varieties of ecstasy on the spiritual platform. And on the in-between platform, when someone is aspiring to be a devotee, there is real distress from so many different sides as Krishna's putting us through experiences to purify us. Wobi hai, wobi nahi hai. What does that mean? Wobi hai, wobi nahi hai. Yeah, we're neither this nor that. We're neither here nor there. Difficult position. You get it from both sides. These people in Shastra are of a different quality of people. Just by hearing, their minds became very fixed, but this was from a different age. So we have to be, you know, you have to do what works too. So the science of grieving is quite well thought out now for the people of the age of Kali. So if you just try to preach to people, that's why even Hiranyakashipu did that. He started telling stories, because there's less resistance when you tell a story. Yeah, so practical. You have to do what works. Generally, the wrong thing to do is just someone who's undergone a great tragedy, is just preach to them. You're not your body, it's all temporary. The mind will refuse, it won't hear. The Vaishnava is transcendental. Have all taken shelter of the Holy Name? Okay, there's the conditions apply. To some degree or another. What to speak of love of God? Yeah, of course it depends on the individual. But so your question is specifically about brahminically or developing love for Krishna? Because you could ask the same question about love for Krishna, but you're asking it specifically about brahminically. And what happens if a person who's brahminically inclined becomes a lover of Krishna, a person who's not brahminically inclined and takes shelter of the holy names fully and becomes a lover of Krishna, but he's not brahminically inclined?
Yeah.
Is that what your question?
Yeah,
how is that? First of all, he's a lover of Krishna. He's achieved the actual goal. So that's wonderful. But he may not have a brahminical inclination. But he'll be in the mode of, he'll be pure. He'll be free from the lower modes. So if required, he can act as a Brahmin, if required. Because he's actually freed. If Krishna wants him to, he has the capacity to do it. Because love of Krishna is so high. There's no touch of the modes. He's taking shelter of the internal energy of Krishna. So that means he's not in the external energy. So if required, he could do that, but he has no desire to change his external activity. But if Krishna wants him to, he's pure. So he's surrendered to Krishna. But he doesn't have an independent desire to do that. So Prabhupada's talking in a general way that even in the society of devotees, we see that we may not have taken shelter of the holy names, all of us, so certainly not equally, and all of us haven't been purified in the same way, but yet it's so much more purer, despite whatever discrepancies are there, at least it's so much more purity than the outside world where there is no taking shelter of the holy names. And it's not possible to do this, to actually refrain from sinful activities without the mercy being uplifted if by the poor sanskaras that many devotees have escaped from the material world carrying, it's not possible for them to maintain without the power of the holy names, even though we tend to take it for granted how much the holy names have affected, especially after we've been chanting for a relatively long time. So if one is actually strictly following and really taking shelter of the holy names, if there's a need for Brahmins, he can perform the brahminical activities. That's will be described later in the canto and the purport from Prabhupada. Because of the emergency situation, you can do that, because if it's an emergency, it's required. The Brahmins by birth aren't acting as Brahmins. Don't have the qualities. So he can do it if required. But he has to, because his sanskaras may be quite opposed to brahminical, he has to really take shelter. I mean, you can't say really take shelter, because all you have to do is say take shelter. Because you can't really take shelter and not really take shelter. Taking shelter means taking shelter. So if one actually makes his shelter the holy names, then he can do it. Perform. He'll get so much more than that, but he also can do that. Yasya lal, I can't remember the, by the process of diksha. By the process of diksha, as bell metal has changed, so the person can be elevated in that way. Is that alright? Any questions on this side before asking? It depends who they're thinking that is their master. Every soul needs a master. So if they're working for someone, but thinking their master is their Guru Maharaj and Krishna, then you can't really say they're sudras. But that tendency to be dependent, a sudra type of independency, where if you give people independence, they just simply cause trouble, that's the sudra mentality. But if one is really actually fixed as a servant of the servant of the servant, naham vipro na chanarapati na pivaisho na sudra, then he's just gopi bhakta pada kamala odasa dasa na das. But the tendencies are strong, so you can't, we can't think we're really powerful if we're not. You know, one can get affected, compromised, and you have to please your boss. And if he doesn't please you, if you don't please your boss, he might fire you or something. That's the problem. And Prabhupada speaks about that somewhere, that you have to please your boss. You have to, if you're working for someone, to do what they say. And if they do something wrong, you can't tell them it's wrong. I mean, rarely. But if you keep yourself as a servant of Krishna, then you can do all kinds of things without falling into those traps. No, putting yourself completely under Krishna's protection and care. He is the master and you are the servant. So any other mentality, this destroys that. The surrendered mentality destroys all the many manifestations of false ego that come. So there's only one real enemy, and that's, in one sense, that's the false ego. But it manifests in many forms. No, on the ultimate level, yes, on the practical level, we act practically. We need it for our service. But we have to act practically. But the practical should be adjusted as closely as possible to what's absolutely true. So we depend on Krishna for protection, but we act practically. You look both ways when you cross the street, but ultimately you're looking both ways isn't going to protect you. You know, when you go to a doctor, but it's ultimately the doctor. That's the practical, but it's not the doctor, and you shouldn't be depending on the doctor, making your shelter the doctor. You shouldn't make your shelter. You should use your own strength and your own intelligence to make the best decisions, but you shouldn't take shelter of your own strength and your intelligence. You should take shelter of Krishna. If you take shelter of your own strength, you're going to fail, because your strength will fail. So that's the balance between, the tricky balance between the theoretical and the practical. But your shelter should be on the best level, the highest level. Don't take shelter of the practical. You don't take shelter of looking both ways. But if you don't look both ways, you're going to get hit by a car. And in India, you have to look up and down and both ways at the same time. Who knows what will hit you? And from where it will come, and from which side of the road. I'm sure he must have asked them to do it. But otherwise, why would they do it? But you could ask that question more. I think Jayadeva Maharaj probably edited this. I think so. So you can ask him.
Most of them are exactly the same thing.
The message is the same, isn't it? Aranyakashipu was speaking Bhagavad Gita. The Prabhupada kindly is writing the purports. Interesting how it came out to be on Gita Jayanti. Isn't it? It's funny. I thought it was funny. And this day, even Hiranyakashipu speaks the Gita. Tomorrow he's going to stop. He's not going to. He's going to assume his asura bhav tomorrow. Today he's very saintly. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jai.